You're listening to a Times Higher Education podcast.
Hello and welcome to this Times Higher Education podcast special, in which we will be discussing MOOCs, Massive Open Online Courses, and specifically the MOOCs offered earlier this year on Coursera by the University of London International Programmes, the first English university to offer such courses on one of the big US MOOC platforms. I'm joined today by Mike Kerrison, Director of Academic Development, Barney Granger, who was Lead Academic Project Manager for the MOOCs, and Patricia McKellar, Associate Director of the Undergraduate Laws Programme, who was very involved with the MOOC on English Common Law. Hello, everybody.
Hello.
Last week in the Times Higher, we covered the fact that you've brought out a very detailed report about these initial four MOOCs, the topics of those MOOCs, covering everything from programming to statistical analysis. Barney, you're listed as the author of this report. Perhaps we should start with you. What are the sort of top-line findings, the big numbers? What's happened with the University of London International Programme's first four MOOCs?
Thanks, Chris. Yeah, they are some pretty big numbers. So, as you said, in June this year, 2013, we launched four massive open online courses. We attracted, in the 6 months from registration till launch, over 210,000 registrations. And those students who initially registered, we 90,000 actually were active participants across the four MOOCs. The students were from over 160 countries, everywhere from Afghanistan all the way through to Zambia. And in the end, we distributed a little under 9,000 statements of accomplishment to those students who passed the four MOOCs at either 40 or 70% pass rates. Mm-hmm. At the end, we also surveyed a number of those students. Now, around 4,000 students were who actually responded to the post-course survey at the end, and they rated our four MOOCs, 91% rated our four MOOCs, anything from good to excellent. That was good, very good, and excellent.
That's quite an interesting point, isn't it? Because, I mean, a lot of those people presumably hadn't completed the MOOCs who were responding and saying it was good. I mean, we hear a lot about completion rates. I guess the actual completion rate from registrants to people who got your statements of accomplishment at the end was probably down around about 4%. But it sounds like with the survey feedback, that's not necessarily the driver of whether it's a successful MOOC for a lot of people.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, 4% was the overall, depending on the MOOC that learners took. For instance, Patricia's English Common Law MOOC, I mean, that had a completion rate of close to 20%. Mm. So, but again, completion may not necessarily be the best way of measuring, how students are succeeding in the way that they engage with MOOCs. We found that in very typically across most MOOCs, and this was something that we found with ours as well, that people are perhaps termed as window shoppers, where they are able to register for free, obviously, and so they can engage with the content as and when they want to. And really, people are looking for specific information. So we found that a lot of students were, for instance, already highly educated with either postgraduate or undergraduate degrees. A lot of them were employed. We're talking over 50% were already in employment. And so we found that a lot of students were engaging with the content in order to increase their skills, or if they felt that they wanted to add extra elements to their CVs and so on. So as well as the more traditional students who were registering, working through the material and then completing at the end, there was also a very large contingent of the student body who were accessing the material and still learning, obviously, but not necessarily interested in actually receiving a statement of accomplishment at the end.
Sure. I can reinforce that in terms of the English Common Law MOOC. As Barney said, 18% of our students completed, and the active participants at the beginning completed. But we also surveyed our students as well at the end of the course, and 40% of the students indicated they had done this course out of curiosity, mm-hmm. Well, not necessarily because they wanted to get a qualification at the end of the day. Another 40% indicated they were doing it for career reasons, whether for their current career or whether because they wanted to change career. So they had a variety of reasons for doing this course rather than just saying, I want to get a certificate of completion at the end.
Mm-hmm. And did you find, with it being English Common Law, it was principally English people taking it? What were the demographics of your course? Or was it interesting? Were there people from places you might not have expected signing
up? The top four countries were the US, Spain, India and Brazil.
Right.
Those are the top four, which I think actually reflected the MOOCs across the course for University of London. And you're right, English common law you would expect would be taken by English people as such. But of course the common law has a base throughout many Commonwealth mm-hmm. countries. So it does have quite a wide interest across the globe.
Well, Mike, how did you? I mentioned some of the topics the MOOCs covered earlier. How did you select sort of which courses pioneered the University of London International Programmes, Coursera MOOCs? How did you choose them?
Well, Chris, it would be nice to say that this was a very cunning design in terms of those that we chose. In truth, we have a breadth of lead colleges within the federal structure. So we have 12 lead colleges with whom we work on international programmes, which are full degree, full fee paying programmes, but are delivered in 180 countries worldwide. So we had a wide choice of different subject range, where we had a lot of academics working in the distance learning online world. And so really the first MOOCs were those that put the hands up first and had some really good ideas. And so we had this range, creative programming, malicious software, the camera never lies, which was really about the context of media and photography and history. And primarily what we wanted to do was link some of the subject matter with some of the full degree programmes that we offer across the world. So, for example, the camera never lies is linked to our BA in history. The English Common Law is linked to the undergraduate LLB that is delivered by six of our lead colleges. Mm-hmm. And malicious software through our Royal Holloway College in terms of information security. So we had some really enthusiastic tutors, we had some great range of subject matter, we had some great innovations that were used by the teams to try and tease different elements of the MOOC platform, and therefore I think we've got quite a lot out of it in terms of the learning.
Mm.
I was going to say, I think each of the programmes probably also went into it with different views. We went into it because we wanted to test new pedagogies, as Mike was saying, mm-hmm. And we could do this at scale in a course which was not formally validated. We could do it in a very safe and non-threatening environment. So it was very useful from our point of view to test out these new pedagogies.
As you said, you were the first English university. A lot of English universities have signed up to FutureLearn since then. Others are considering. Mm-hmm. Manchester just joined Coursera. Just to give them an idea, those who perhaps haven't joined any platform just yet, what was the sort of time it took to develop each MOOC? What was the financial investment required by the university to develop each MOOC and get it to a point at which it could be delivered? Because that's the kind of thing that a lot of universities I know are curious to hear.
Well, definitely Colin, the co-founder of Coursera, originally was invited to the University of London in June 2012. And she gave us a presentation about what the platform was, gave us more information about how it worked, what MOOCs were ultimately, because at that stage Coursera had only really launched as an organisation in April that year, and so there was still, obviously it was on people's consciousness, but we were unsure, you know, what MOOCs were and how they worked. It was really useful. It was very clear that there were some, you know, alignments with what Coursera was trying to do with what the international programmes missions were, and so we went ahead and signed a contract in September 2012, and really that was when the development started across the four MOOCs. It really developed, and the development started in earnest properly in probably January this year, 2013. Mm-hmm. And so we really had 6 months to put together these 6 week courses, and you know, I think that it came out pretty well ultimately. You know, it was. Very resource intensive. There was a lot of work put into it, mainly because ultimately we no one had done this before, and so there wasn't necessarily a huge amount of information on best practice or the best way to do things and so on. So a lot of it we were finding our way. We had a lot of support from Coursera. We obviously discussed amongst ourselves, what people were doing and how they were doing it. We had a basic framework within which the four MOOCs would be delivered, and that was 6 weeks and with 5 to 10 learning hours per week, obviously because we were trying to give students a taste of what an international programmes degree would be like. But within that basic framework, we invited the four MOOC teams, the academic teams, to populate it and design the pedagogy pretty much as much as they as they wanted to, and I think that's demonstrated in the breadth and the ways that the four MOOCs were actually developed in the end. They are very different MOOCs, but given the 91% success rate, I think, from some students, it obviously worked for across
sure,
the board.
Sure.
Thinking of the financial investment, mm-hmm. Chris, which you mentioned, and I'm sure other MOOC developers are interested in. Broadly speaking, it was between 12,000 and 30,000 was the marginal cost. But I think for anybody developing MOOCs in any of the universities, clearly one of the key aspects was having a team who knew the material. So they were starting with an understanding of distance and online learning to different degrees, but nonetheless they all had experience in that area.
Mm-hmm.
And so that cost itself works out at an average of around £20,000 per MOOC,
mm-hmm.
of the four MOOCs that we delivered. But I think on top of that, it's worth recognising that we are trying to still measure the element of staff input, learning technologist input, because we have full-time staff, sometimes part-time staff working on the support elements. It might be reasonable to say that could be roughly the same again,
mm-hmm.
but it does vary because, of course, the type and range of activities on the MOOCs does vary, and the ways that the innovation can lead to greater elements of managing the MOOC development once it started, things like Hangout rooms, Facebook synchronized chats. So the staff time has varied across the four, so it's not an easy figure to put it on, but that gives you at least, and people listening, an idea of the kind of scale of input. I think FutureLearn have pegged it around 30,000, so it's not that far away.
Patricia, you're obviously very involved in one MOOC particularly. Does that chime with your experience?
It does chime, and Barney's right. We did start probably more seriously in January, and as you can imagine, the first few months there's lots of content gathering, discussions, working at what we're actually going to do, whereas the last kind of couple of months before the MOOC actually started, that's when the really concentrated work was done, preparing the videos and preparing the activities.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this is where we discovered that the Coursera platform itself had certain limitations, shall we say, in that we had wanted to have quite a range of interactive activities. And what we had to do was we had to build these interactivities in other areas and bolt these onto the platform itself, so that we could have a range of activities rather than just the activities offered by Coursera, which were essentially multiple choice questions.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm not saying that as a big negative comment, because in fact Coursera were very receptive when we spoke to them about the kinds of things we wanted to do. And I fully expect that in time, a lot of these types of activities that we have created will be part of the platform, will be available for future uses. But that was something which we had to spend quite a lot of time on ourselves, because we wanted to have this as being more than just a transmission of information.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
We wanted there to be not just the talking head video and the assessment at the end. We wanted to have a range of activities and formative assessment activities for the students, not just multiple choice questions, a range to engage them.
Sure. And I know you also spent quite a lot of time at the beginning monitoring the forums as well.
Yeah.
Because obviously there's forums then where students can talk about their courses. Obviously they do pick up little bugs here and there, I'm sure. But also you have to keep an eye, I'd imagine, on what sort of topics of conversation are popping up. And that's something that sounds like it could be a particularly labour-intensive sort of thing to do. Is that fair to say?
It is fair to say. And I think before we went into the actual running of the MOOCs, I think we were all aware of MOOCs in the past which had imploded, for want of a better word, and part of that was because of the sheer volume of students and the negative comments which were generated in some of the forums, which tended to kind of re-energise themselves to a certain extent. And we didn't want that to happen with ours. We wanted to make sure that we knew what was happening in our MOOC, and if anything was causing us any concern, we were on top of it and were dealing with it. Now, you've got to remember, in our MOOC, we didn't just have discussion forums, and of the discussion forums, we had five.
Mm-hmm.
We also had a Facebook page, we had a Twitter account, and we had a dedicated email as well. So there were all these methods whereby the students could contact us, and we had to be aware of what was going on in all these different accounts. And as you say, we had to be very careful. Some of the posts and some of the comments which were going on to the forums were appropriate, and that some of the discussions were not becoming either offensive or any cyberbullying or whatever was going on. So we did have to watch very carefully at the beginning. I'm probably perhaps more worried about that kind of thing than perhaps others are.
Mm-hmm.
My colleague who was with me is much more tech savvy and was quite happy to let a lot of these things run. We found a balance, but it did mean we had to talk quite a lot about the posts. You know, so not just saying just sitting there looking and answering posts, you're looking, considering, talking about it. In fact, on occasion we had to discuss with Barney and Mike as well, and I think issues which had arisen, just to see how we would deal with them. Because you've got to remember, there is a reputational risk for University of London here.
Absolutely.
And you know, we wanted to make sure that we were, as I say, not only dealing well with the students, but ensuring that everybody was being well looked after.
Sure. And there are different models of dealing with that kind of, you know, engagements on a huge scale. I mean, obviously, because MOOCs are open by their very nature, anyone can ultimately join up, and as well as joining up, they can also contribute whatever it is that they wish to contribute, and so the forums can be incredibly useful places, and also occasionally they can be quite difficult places to navigate, because you have you can occasionally have minorities of students who aren't interested in the content; they just want to make themselves heard ultimately. And so, alongside that kind of engagement, it's as long as you have a kind of a clear understanding of how you will manage that, you can have an incredibly useful contact with students. And we saw lots of examples of ways in which students could help each other, could work through problems together, and generally support one another. Even though there was already support from academics and you know, people like Patricia and other sort of teaching staff on the MOOCs, you know, there was an amazing amount of contributions that were positive as well as negative ultimately. So we saw both sides, and I think that obviously in Patricia's case and in the other three MOOCs, we felt, I think, that kind of forum management was dealt with appropriately. I think you can remove comments if you wish, and if they were offensive, and you can stop ultimately, you know, the nuclear option is stopping people from contributing completely from the forums, or even taking them off the course. So I think as long as people are aware of how, you know, anyone can ultimately contribute to a MOOC forum, you can manage that.
I suppose the proof of the pudding there will be in the eating. I mean, what's next? Have you been so pleased with the outcomes of these MOOCs, Mike, that you have plans for more? I understand you've got a number already on the menu that we'll be launching next year.
Yeah, we're really quite excited. There's that really, since the initial launch of the four MOOCs about a year ago, in terms of actually starting with the names of what we'll be delivering, we've had a lot of the lead colleges very, very interested also just to wait and see, so that the first MOOCs would be looked at as a pilot and in terms of their appetite to engage. And we've now got a number of different lead colleges who'll be in this next phase. I think I can give you a little highlight of one of the MOOCs that will be slightly different, and we hope will be very, very interesting, is one on employability skills, which our careers group will be working with us on. And this is really about finding ways in which how students can present themselves in the most effective way with their graduate skills, with their subject knowledge skills, and present themselves effectively to employers. And we think that's really important, clearly, for our international programmes graduates, but pretty much anybody out there who needs to put together effective CVs, prepare themselves for interviews and so on. And we have a careers group who've got really a reputation second to none within the sector, who look after around 70,000 on-campus students every year and deliver that kind of service. So we've got a range of MOOCs in this next wave. We'll be announcing probably by early December which five, maybe even six, that we go with, and we'll also be talking to the teams of the existing MOOCs that we've delivered in phase one as to how they will be delivered in the next year. And I think it's also important to say, for those universities listening in who are thinking of developing MOOCs, really the sustainability issue is really important, so that in the design, the materials are designed to run multiple times. Of course, that's the real advantage of offering them at scale and potentially multiple times during the year. And that'll give you a greater payoff in terms of the investment, and whatever the objectives of individual institutions are, it just gives you a greater return for the investment and the effort spent in the first MOOC.
In terms of sustainability, our course, what we've done is we've actually stripped out all the interactive elements of the course and retained all the learning objects, and we're now using those on our undergraduate laws programmes. Mm-hmm. So there's been a repurposing, shall we say, of the resources which we created specifically for the MOOC, and it's being used for our full-time students. The other thing I would say as well, as far as sustainability and things that we've learned here, is the significant use of learning analytics. And I think we've all learned, and essentially we're going to be designing the future of learning really around the learning analytics, or the information that we gain from the learning analytics, which we've been able to determine from the data we've discovered.
Which, I mean, you must have had fairly good analytics anyway. Obviously with international programmes it's a bit different. You were very experienced in providing online education, but is it that scale that really is the difference here? I mean, I understand there were more students registered on the MOOCs than have completed a course with international programmes, which is staggering.
Yeah. Which is staggering. I mean, we've got 54,000 students worldwide currently on our full programmes. We've got over 100 programmes, so we've got a real breadth of subject coverage there. And I think the learner analytics is a really important element, and I think it's fair to say across all of the MOOC platforms it's still early days in terms of using those analytics for adaptive testing, for example. So, you know, we had weekly data dumps of the Coursera student activity. There was pretty much a continuous update of the activities of who's been watching what video, who's been doing what assessment. In terms of usability for a programme that's fully tutored and supported with a tutor in a much more personal way, let's say, it certainly requires some of those analytics to be personalised to students. It's going to require those to have built-in intervention points as well for programme tutors. And so I think that it's early days yet, but it certainly gives us an immense insight into where Coursera are going. They've announced recently a $43 million additional input of capital, and I know that they've got very ambitious plans to improve the platform and the various analytics that come with that. So I think this is an exciting time. We've got in there on an early phase of launching, and I think we see it as a really important partnership in learning as we go along.
Mm-hmm. And I think it's something that, I mean, obviously, as the international programmes, as distance and flexible learning provider, we were aware of some of the pedagogies around learning analytics and how they can benefit the student and help, ultimately help them succeed to receive a qualification. But I think it shows the flexibility of the kind of MOOC platform as well in introducing all kinds of different institutions, no matter what their method of delivery is, whether it's on campus or at a distance, how kind of data and analytics can be of a huge amount of use in understanding how students engage with your content, you know, how you can improve your content based on their feedback and ultimately how you can help them achieve the qualification that they're paying for. So I think there are some real benefits no matter who you are as an institution, no matter what the mode of delivery that you offer.
Mm-hmm. No, it's fascinating stuff. And the report itself obviously contains all this information and more. How can people get hold of that?
It's on our website, londoninternational.co.uk, I believe. .ac.uk?
.ac.uk. Yeah, no, it's called Massive Open Online Course.
That's right,
report,
yeah,
so you'll find
it. It's on the front page there, so people are welcome to go to our site and have a look at it. Hopefully you'll provide some context and just give one experience of using a MOOC platform and contribute to the kind of wider debate, really.
And you know, just to say, one of the elements we've only touched on, but what's really important for us is it has provided that outlet for some students who were thinking about doing a full-time programme, particularly at undergraduate level. And we now already have, and remember, it's fairly early days in terms of the application process, and some of our programmes don't neatly fit in to the point at which the MOOC's finished. But we've already got 45 students who've expressed interest, having done the MOOCs that we've offered, in our full-time programmes, mainly at undergraduate level. So although the profile of students through both Coursera and our international programme MOOCs have been first and second degree graduates, we actually do have a number who are very interested in doing undergraduate. And, you know, although 45 in the scale of the numbers we've talked about doesn't sound much, it brings in revenue of somewhere approaching a quarter of a million. And that's, you know, aside from the financial aspect of that, that certainly makes it, in terms of a business model, a much more achievable target to actually invest in MOOCs like this, and actually is part of our widening access mission of the University of London. And very affordable degrees, so that's part of the, you know, part of what we're about, and that's why it fits very well with Coursera.
Well, Mike, Barney and Patricia, thank you very much for joining me.
Thank you.
Thanks, Chris. Thank you.
You're listening to a Times Higher Education podcast.